The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Alvin Chevalot, the CTO at thehouseshop.com. All right. Well, like I was saying, mate, thank you so much for taking the time, Alvin. You know, it's not the easiest thing to schedule these, so I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to finally speaking with you, Andy.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. It's, I'm such a big kind of techie and kind of startup nerd, so it's always good to get someone like you on the show who's working on, for me, is like a particularly compelling project at the moment, actually, because I'm currently buying a house, and as it happens, you know, you are the CTO of thehouseshop.com, so it probably would have been beneficial me having this conversation about a year ago, so I could have kind of prepared myself a little bit better. As this is the first time we're going through this, it's quite a shambles, needless to say. So I'm all for any sort of disruption in this space. My hairline's certainly gone back a little bit over this period.
We're a disruptive kind of technology, certainly. I mean, our main goal is to actually provide like a great service to this industry, and we think there's a lot of areas of the property sector that are kind of under represented at the moment, or service isn't just there, quite there for them. So HouseShop, after its founding, initially the goal was to kind of allow people to list their properties for sale by owner, or let their own properties directly. And if you look at, obviously, some of the big players who are quite established in the market, their goal was kind of have this pipeline from agents to this property portal, and that kind of niche was nice and secure, and that's the way things have been done forever. But in recent years, you've seen a lot of kind of new startups coming into the market. So, you know, you've got us, and you've got the Purple Bricks, and you've got Open Rent. A lot of places like this at the moment are coming into the market and really causing a bit of disruption. And yeah, that trend, from what we can see, is continuing. We're being approached a lot behind the scenes by quite a few big companies who want to tap in to this new kind of mindset of the industry at the moment. Yeah. So yeah, it's very exciting times for us.
Yeah, I think so. It's all about service, really, isn't it? It's a great time, I think, just in general for services, because there's kind of been this push that's come from tech that's kind of demanding more transparency and a more kind of customer-centric approach. And, you know, historically across sectors, you know, the service industry, you know, for whatever reason, it always had, you know, such a lack of transparency. And it was always this very much the this is just the way that things are feel about it. And we're seeing
definitely. I mean, this is something across all sectors, really. If you look at it, there's these established players, and they don't have any particular incentive to, to change the way a good model that works for them, that's kind of barriers to entry for smaller players. It's within their interest, certainly. But I mean, as you can see over the years, like with Uber and a lot of these other kind of disruptive technologies, for good or bad, they've been able to kind of put the customer first and kind of bypass the traditional route of getting into the industry. And like you said, yeah, it's all about serving the customer and putting the customer first, rather than creating these kind of creating these kind of groups where it's difficult to enter, and creating these established kind of frameworks for doing things. And as we all know, a lot of times these established way of doing things can be very costly, The customer isn't always best served. So yeah, it's really exciting to be in a disruptive industry like I am.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things as well. It's easy when you're involved in it, I'm sure, because everyone kind of has to deal with it along the way. So when you know the headache for yourself, it's almost like more of a motivator, I'm sure.
The initial platform, it was founded with a mindset of, look, we've all been searching for property. We've all had that kind of experience where perhaps an estate agent wasn't quite above board, or the issues that go with the legal wranglings, etc. Just the difficulties involved. So this is very much where the company was established from. It was established from, you know, we were all users of this kind of services, and we thought, look, we could do a lot better, and we can serve people a lot better as well. And that kind of leads into the social impact of a lot of what we're doing as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously you wanted to mention about the, you know, the social impact of, I suppose, what the project entails. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, happy for you to kind of, you know, articulate some of the points and opinions that you have on that.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, one of the key things we're doing at the house shop is actually kind of, we're trying to create services and products like you mentioned before, that actually engage with the customer and put the customer first. And to that end, one of the key facets of the kind of property industry is that, you know, there's a lot of long-term renters out there who can't necessarily get their foot up onto the property ladder because they don't necessarily have that credit history. They don't necessarily have that kind of experience or kind of the right kind of income or whatever. So with one of our products, which is actually called RentScore, we're able to actually record rental payments, obviously with the tenant's permission. So long-term renters who've been renting for like 5 years, 10 years, we can actually help them build up a credit history. And we're working with in partnership with Experian on that one. So that this is the kind of product that it will enable kind of, you know, long-term tenants to actually potentially get onto the property ladder by building up their credit history. And that's the kind of thing that really excites me about what we're doing, because we can have a real social impact and actually really help people with the products and services that we offer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so important, like say, especially in areas like London and such as well, where, you know, this could be a massive difference. The times that we live in, it's so, so difficult, and it is a massive social matter. So yeah, I think that's extremely powerful and very poignant. To take a step back a little bit about your kind of experiences and, you know, your area of expertise, obviously you've been were prolific as a software engineer, and before kind of getting into more senior roles. Kind of what was your kind of progressive path, I suppose, from, you know, being involved directly in software engineering and coding to kind of the place where you are now, where I'm sure it's more of a managerial position. Do you want to just kind of talk us through a little bit of kind of your background and experience?
Yeah, sure, I can do. So, as you said, I was a software engineer for many years, just kind of working on projects. But I think there was always a part of me that, you know, I like to get hands-on and understand the business flows and kind of put a bit of a business analyst hat on. Yeah, I mean, even software developers, I mean, sometimes people don't want to get involved in that side of things, but I always wanted to know the mechanics of what I was building and how I could kind of best serve the client, the customer, or the company I was working for. And I think that there was a natural progression to that. So in about 2014, I kind of went into, kind of developed my own agency, basically. And that's when I actually met the house shop. I had a few clients at the time. And from there, that's where I built out the platform. And it was just a natural progression for me. I kind of wanted to kind of own something and kind of lead something. I think I've got to the point where I've seen all of these kind of great startups that I've helped create, but I wanted to actually be part of it. So for example, I remember working on a project called What Three Words, and that was a really exciting global mapping solution, and I remember being one of the first developers on that team, and now they've got worldwide success with that, and it kind of inspired me to actually go forward and build some of these things myself from the ground up. So yeah, that's basically how I kind of gradually shifted towards more managerial, towards more kind of entrepreneurship. For me, it was a natural progression. I think some people don't want to do it as well. I think some people are happy just in their kind of comfort zone and, you know, going along and doing the software development. But for me, there was always that drive to do something a bit more and to utilize some of the skills I had with, like, communicating with people, doing a bit of project management, and, of course, software developing as well.
Yeah. The kind of the passion for software, was it, were you kind of one of those people who was always fascinated by fixing things, or was it more that you wanted to solve problems? Where would you say your kind of drive initially came
from? From a young age, it's funny actually, because I'm the youngest of three brothers, and from a young age, being by far the youngest, I was always fixing all of the devices around the house and tuning the TV and setting up the VCRs, etc. So I just became the tech guy of my family, funny enough. That's how I kind of how I started, and from there the fascination just continued to grow. So for example, I remember when we first got our kind of first computers, this was one of those old Amstrad CPC computers, way back in the 80s, I think, early 90s, late 80s. And I was just hooked to it from then. Like my brothers would play a few games on it, but I would always be looking at kind of getting new software applications and trying to hack the system and doing a little bit more. So it was always a passion for me, technology. And luckily, I had the right kind of mentors and the right kind of people to progress me more into the tech field.
Interesting, mate. Yeah, it's fascinating, the journey, isn't it, I suppose, when you look back and you kind of see where the interests lie. And I think the fascinating thing about software and I think across the board in the technical world is that people are typically interested in it from a very young age. And it's almost, it's almost the kind of ideal job in a lot of ways, isn't it, really? Because there's not many other careers that I can think of before, software and technology came along where people were able to pursue their passions from being a young age into kind of an adult life. You know, outside of being an athlete and maybe like a musician or something, there was never that much. And now it seems that kind of with what technology's brought, there's a lot of people who do have, you know, a genuine passion and interest in it from a very young age and now able to pursue it. And it's almost kind of unprecedented. I mean, I'm not to say that other professions, people don't have that interest from a young age, but this does seem to be an unprecedented level, typically across the board.
Yeah, sure. No, I totally see that. I mean, I would kind of say there is another side to that as well, in that, yes, you can be passionate about these things from an early age, but when you actually get into kind of a job doing this, there can be an element of, you know, you're not necessarily working on exactly what you want to work on. There's business needs. So, and a lot of kind of software engineers, that they face this issue of they want to build great things, but sometimes in the industry, like from a business perspective, we need to focus on the here and now. And that's always a struggle I find with a lot of my kind of software engineer friends, that, you know, they want to build amazing things, but at the same time, someone needs to maintain those things that they've built. So Yeah, it definitely is something that is a great opportunity, especially if you're passionate about it from a young age. But yeah, a bit of a cautionary side to it as well of, you know, it is a profession at the end of the day, and you do have to be professional about the way you approach it. If you want to remain a hobbyist and kind of just build some projects in your spare time, that's fine. And maybe going into a career in software isn't necessarily the best for that person, but...
Yeah, agreed, mate. Agreed. You know, what things within software now are you kind of much more, I suppose, focused on and interested in, you know, than, you know, now? And I know things are changing quite constantly, but does your kind of level of focus have to change, you know, the more senior you become and obviously away from contracting and, you know, being more involved in-house? Is it almost in a lot of ways a completely different role with regards to like the areas that you have to kind of focus on?
Yeah, so to answer that question, it's a totally different mindset, to be honest. So I was a bit reluctant about taking on this kind of role because I knew beforehand it would be very involved. And I'm the kind of person, I like to be a bit hands-on. So I always like to do a bit of code as well. And kind of, you know, that's my kind of area. That's the thing I love to do. So the management side of it's been quite a learning curve, actually, because, you know, you're expected to deal with everything, basically. Like, so... From recruitment and being a startup as well, you know, it's even more the case. So, you know, I have to deal with recruitment. I have to manage the staff and make sure that the team are engaged and happy. I have to get involved with project management. Then, of course, I have to kind of put my technical architect hat on and kind of envision where we're going, the direction, and even interact with like other departments regularly. So, for example, we have a sales team here and I need to kind of understand how they're using things and kind of even put a bit of a business analyst hat on. So it is very demanding and it can be quite stressful. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone because, you know, there's a lot of work to do and there's a lot of pressure on you. But at the same time, I think it's very rewarding when you can shape the team and you can actually take that ownership of something and push it forward in the direction that you feel is best. So it's empowering, but it comes with its burdens as well.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And obviously you pursued contracting before that. Was that something that you kind of consciously pursued originally? And, you know, if so, what was the sort of, you know, what was the rationale behind that as opposed to kind of going into kind of more permanent positions?
So, yeah, the contracting side of it, there was that point when I just kind of, I didn't want to stay in the same place for too long. Of course, the money's good contracting, but I kind of wanted to get a broader level of experience and kind of get in the door at different companies and see how they did things. So it actually taught me quite a lot. So, you know, in one contract, we were working for quite a big publisher. And we were building out this new platform for them. It had to be highly performant, highly scalable. And that was really interesting because I learned a lot about DevOps and I learned a lot about kind of just building these high concurrency systems there. And the same goes for other places that I contracted at. So, yeah, it did give me that kind of broader knowledge that I wanted, but there were downsides to contracting as well.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the instability is the one thing that I think people probably kind of steer away from. If that's a major concern, would you kind of have any, you know, an opinion on that for people who are concerned about that?
Yeah. I mean, instability, I think as long as you're delivering, most places that I was contracting at didn't really want to get rid of you, really. I mean, there was always the inevitable redundancies. I guess it came from above when, you know, they were looking at costs and thinking we're spending too much. And it was always the contractors that would be the first to go. Luckily, in the last place I was at, I managed to just miss that. But a lot of other contractors did go. But it's not just that, I don't think, because you kind of walk in with that mindset that, you know, you might only be there for 3 or 6 months. But I think for me, the main downside was you're starting this project, but you don't necessarily get to see it through. So you never really get to see something right to the end, potentially. I mean, there are some contractors, they've been at the same place for many years, and obviously, you know, that experience might be different. But for the most part, it was that lack of kind of being a full member of the team and being able to see things through to the end that was quite a downside, actually.
Interesting. Yeah. And obviously now with the project, it seems like it was very much about the company, the kind of the mission that's kind of drawn you into pursuing something on a kind of permanent basis. You know, is that kind of one of the main reasons why you kind of pursued it, was because of the mission, and was it one of the main determining factors for going into a permanent role?
Yeah, it was being a part of something and being part of a team and getting to see something through. These were the main kind of drawing factors for me. That's it, basically. It's being able to kind of gel with the team, see something through, and, you know, not just be a passerby. Kind of, as a contractor, I felt a lot of the times in the companies, while they'd see you as one of them, you would also have this element of being an outsider who could be gone tomorrow. And, you know, I remember being at places and people saying, oh, why don't you come perm? Why don't you come perm? And it was a constant thing, because there is this element of you're a bit transient. You know, you could be here today or gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a disconnect from the regular staff and the regular management. Right here now, I'm in the midst of things, and I really feel like an integral part of the team. And, you know, I really feel like, you know, I'm driving things forwards, and people don't see me as just here today, gone tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose that's something that you've been longing for. I mean, what was the? Did you actually start out your career in contracting? So it was, you know, how long were you actually contracting for, all in all?
All in all, I was contracting just for 2 years, actually.
Oh, right.
So before that, I actually started out my career working in an agency. It was an agency in central London. It wasn't your typical agency. It was two actually school friends founded it after uni, basically. And I was their first employee. And, basically, we worked for like a lot of different companies as an agency. So we worked on projects for Samsung, World Duty Free, even had a project for ExxonMobil, and that's kind of how I the first kind of commercial work that I did. It was very much, we've got this project, we've got this spec, let's get it out as soon as possible, and obviously to a higher level of quality. And after a while, we did work with quite a few different startups as well. So I think I mentioned earlier that we worked for a company, a startup, What Three Words. So actually, the owner of the agency, he became like a shareholder in this. So again, it was like, you know, a load of school friends who knew each other from uni and school who founded that company. And I actually got to work on the core platform, the initial stages, and it was really exciting. I mean, they've gone off now to, you know, have investment and kind of, they've won loads of awards. I believe they won like an Intel award for disruptive technology, etc. And they're just a global name now, and they're continuing to grow. So we did get to work on exciting projects like that, and but it was towards the end when that's what inspired me to kind of move into my own thing.
Right, amazing. Yeah, I think so. And you know, it's all kind of necessary components, and and drivers, essentially, isn't it, in order to kind of get the best out of yourself. You have to kind of be aware of those. It's almost like a self-assessment process, isn't it, in order to figure out what you like. And the conclusion I seem to be able to draw is that, you know, obviously the contracting kind of helps in a lot of ways to kind of give that kind of varied, you know, in a short, relatively short period of time, a kind of a variance of experience that probably, you know, helped kind of identify, you know, those kind of key points that you felt most strongly about, and therefore were able to, you know, kind of work towards, you know, being particularly motivated and I suppose ultimately enjoying what you're working on.
Yeah, I have to say every job I've ever held has kind of added something to where I am now, I would say. So, you know, when I was straight out of school at 18, I think I worked for Sainsbury's, and after that I worked in a call centre for a few months. But even jobs like that that don't seem relevant, they did teach me quite a bit. They, like, for example, in the call centre, it taught me how to kind of communicate and how to, you know, how to deal with customers, and oftentimes quite angry. So every experience, I think, I took as something that I can learn something from and progress with. And obviously, going back to the contracting side of things, being able to have varied experiences in different organisations at different levels, it definitely builds up, you know, a lot of kind of understanding of how business operations work, how technology works in different contexts as well, because, you know, it's the same industry, you know, programming, but, you know, a programmer for a property site, programmer in a publishing company, a programmer at a financial services company, you all have different kind of mindsets and different ways of going about problems. I can give you an example of that. For example, in a publishing company, for example, you're more concerned with, you know, having these ultra fast pages, having kind of ultra usable technology for the editors, and being able to do things like real time updates, and you're very much focused on the SEO side of things. Whereas for a financial services company, you might be more interested in kind of audit trails and ledger functions, and kind of how we process things with a sales team in a back office or kind of application. That might very much be the focus, whereas in the property sector, our focus could be on building relationship with estate agents, building relationships between tenants and landlords and kind of other business partners. So while we're using the same kind of core technologies, to get that varied understanding of how different industries operate, you could just take a bit from everything, and it builds up into something that's more than the sum of its parts, if you like.
You know, with where you are now, and obviously being in the kind of the permanent role, you know, being fully embraced in a project that you're kind of compelled by and are motivated by, does it make it easier to forecast the future, knowing, you know, full well where you want to be?
I get what you mean. Totally. But basically, where we are right now, we've got a plan that I've helped put together, obviously, for the next, you know, 24 months, really. And we've got kind of milestones, and we've got this kind of vision of where we want to be. And I think that vision is what keeps a lot of people around here going. I think knowing that, you know, where we are today isn't where we're going to be tomorrow, knowing that we've got a plan in place for growth, and we've got plans in place to increase revenue, increase our service, increase kind of, you know, take up, increase interaction with our customers, etc. So yeah, those long-term plans do help a lot. It kind of, I think you need a vision. vision. You need to have some kind of goal where you want to be in a year's time, where you want to be in 2 years' time, where you want to be in 5 years' time. Personal goals plus company goals as well. And I've met a lot of people who kind of maybe wander around a bit aimlessly, not in such a negative way, but they go from job to job and they don't necessarily have this kind of clear picture of where they want to be. And I've noticed those people tend to be less happy and less satisfied with what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Well, I think that's right. I don't think I could have said it better myself. I tend to really agree with that. You know, I think it's great. It's great. It's great perspective as well. Do you find now you're in a position and I suppose, do you find it interesting that people kind of come to you for advice now?
Yeah, I do find that interesting. I mean, I guess in the back of my mind, I'm still the 18-year-old who's just got out of school. But, you know, I have learned that with where I am now, there's a certain responsibility with that, and that there's a certain level of kind of expectation. And to be honest, I do want to genuinely kind of help people along the path, because I've been there. Like I see people starting out in development now, and I kind of see where I was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and I kind of feel, yeah, look, here, do this, do that. And I do try to give advice, and I actually love to do it, because if I see someone who's eager and kind of wants to learn and wants to progress, there's no better feeling than kind of helping someone along the way.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a nice thing to do as well, because you do tend to look back and think about people who helped you probably at the start of the career. So it's kind of full cycle in a lot of ways. And I think it's important, not just because I think it's the right thing to do, but also it's amazing now how much information you can get from even people who are at the start of their career. Everyone has an interesting point of view, and everyone tends to have an interesting perspective. And I think regardless of, like, you know, their, you know, position in their career, I think there's always information that can be gathered from conversation, from people who are in similar industry. I think it's an important thing to do and to take the time to do. You know, I'm obviously lucky that we have this platform, but, you know, a lot of other people might not, but I still think it's massively important to take that time and, you know, communicate and converse with people regardless of, you know, what stage in their career.
Yeah, I mean, regarding that, I think it's really important as a software developer to actually, you know, engage with the community. So there's loads of kind of groups and meetups all over the place. So, for example, on Meetup, you've got conferences based on the language of your choice, or maybe just based on agile and management, or even design and other areas like that. And it's important to kind of have these conversations with people, find out the trends of the industry, because one facet of this industry is that it's constantly changing. So you know machine learning is all the rage nowadays, but you know with kind of front-end technologies, I remember a time when there weren't front-end technologies at all. I think it's like, you know, it's really important to kind of engage in communities and meetups and things like that. And it gives you kind of a broader sense of knowledge about kind of where the industry is moving towards. And I often find that, you know, I'll just find out from someone about a new piece of technology that's kind of revolutionizes the way we do things in a certain way. And I think, you know, I've met a lot of developers who are a bit stuck in their ways and aren't that willing to embrace new technologies and new changes. But unfortunately, these are the type of engineers that quite often get left behind. So you've got to engage, and you've got to kind of keep up to date with what's going on in the industry, definitely.
Alvin, like I say, yeah. I know we're a bit short on time now, but appreciate you taking the time, mate.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, cheers, Andy.
Cheers, Alvin. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.